Hey, this is Alex Terranova, and this is the Dream Mason Podcast. We've been taught to behave, to fit in, to follow the rules, but Dream Masons reject conventional thought. Dream Masons are rebels. They take a chisel to the marble that is typical traditional life. They carve out brilliance and broadcast it to the world. Join me for another chapter as we unmask convention, embrace the rebels within us, and more deeply come to explore the complex and agitated edges of our existence. Now, before we get started, please don't be a rebel yet and grab your phone and hit that little button that says subscribe. Thank you. Because your dreams don't build themselves. What's up, and welcome back to the Dream Mason Podcast. I am your host, Alex Terranova. And this is going to be a really different and new episode. One of the things I'm trying to do is find people that are up to things that either I don't know a lot about or different things in the world. You know, we've had like coaches and authors and personal development people. And I think that anyone that's actually like creating some good stuff in the world is probably working on themselves and like, you know, developing themselves. But you know, I want to really look into different fields and find people that are doing all sorts of different things and see like the commonalities between them, but also see what they do to support their growth and have them develop. My guest today is somebody who I just recently met, but we have all these like random connections. Right. He used to be in my networking group. And I've heard about him. I heard he was like so successful that he left. And
you were like, I heard you used to be in my BNI group and then you made it. I was like, so what? Everyone else did it?
Yeah, no, but it was like, it was a joke, right? Yeah. But so we have this connection, you know, I think you have some friends that are friends with me. I have a client that you know. But we just have these connections. And then this weekend we were both at a wealth development conference, personal development, and
like a business and personal growth.
Yeah. And we, you know, it was the first time we actually got to meet. I follow you on social media. I was like, I think you follow me also.
Yeah.
But like, we never actually, and it was the first time we actually got to meet in person.
Right.
And it was, you know, you were awesome enough to say, hey, I'll come on the podcast. And we set it up in like, 3 days?
Yeah.
So it's a little impromptu, not a lot of like research and backing, but a lot of like random connections. And you're like the perfect person to be on the Dream Mason podcast, because Dream Masons are people that literally carve themselves and their lives out of stone, or out of, you know, carve up the human ego and appearance and all that to make their lives they want to be and in service of a dream. Yeah. And you're up to a lot of things. So my guest for everyone watching, everybody listening, is Jason Stewart. Jason is the founder, CEO of Epic Fighting. He's also the co-founder of the Epic Mastermind Experience. He's the author of Fight Quotes. He has had a real estate business, or been in the real estate business, for 15 years. His real estate company is Stewart Estate Teams. And you got 2 books in the works. You're doing a lot, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. Yeah, these impromptu shows are often the best. So, yeah. Fire away, any direction you want to go.
Well, so I think the thing first off is, I mean, just thanks for being here. You're up to so much stuff, so I know, you know, you were pretty funny. You're like, no, I'm not that busy, I can do it.
No, the biggest misconception is that really that when people perceive successful people, they think that they're so busy. And what I found is my most successful friends, the friends that are way more successful than me, possibly more successful than I'll ever be, are the ones that I call them and they pick up. You know what I mean? It's the people in that mid-range that are super busy. The people that are hustling and they're working really hard, but maybe they haven't grown their mind quite yet. And they're usually between that 80,000 to 200,000 range. And those are the ones that are often like, you know, they have a little ego and they maybe are just like working so hard and they're showing off how hard they're working. But I've got a lot of friends that are just doing so many amazing things that, you know, they text me back, call me back all the time, and I'm surprised when they do still. But I've learned that they have the time. People don't usually ask them for it. They just assume they don't.
I think something, too, is you're all about – you gave one of the talks at the event. You did a panel, And your talk was like on turning your passion into purpose. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've noticed lately is like my books come out and the podcast is really starting to grow. Mm-hmm. And thank you. And I'm like taking over a media company. Like all these things are things I'm super excited about. All of a sudden, those feelings of how busy I am start falling away because I'm like psyched to get up. I'm psyched to dive into this. And what I notice is when we're super busy doing stuff that's hard or we don't want to do or like is a struggle, time feels slower. Yes. Time feels like we don't have any, we're overwhelmed. But when we're doing things that we're psyched about, it's all of a sudden like you're like, how do I have all this extra time?
Yeah, I remember Tony Robbins used to talk about like when you're really working towards something you're super passionate about, you can't wait to wake up in the morning and you cannot go to sleep at night. You don't want to sleep because you just want to get to it. And I remember when I was younger, I heard him say that and I was like, what is he talking about? And then when I was starting Epic Fighting, I felt it and I was like, oh my gosh, I know exactly what he's talking about. It'd be like 2 a.m. and my brain's racing and I'm like, okay, hurry up and go to sleep so I can hurry up and wake up. And, 5 hours of sleep and you hit the ground running and you're just like, you don't feel tired at all. You're just so excited to be working on that.
So how did you get, let's just give a little bit of foundation for people. You didn't start out with Epic Fighting. It started with real estate, right?
Started in college selling supplements out of the trunk of my car. And then I was working 3 jobs selling supplements out of the trunk of my car, going to school full time, and had a baby. So I had a baby at 19. And so when people ask me or tell me, ask me if I'm busy or tell me like you're so busy, I'm like, no. Like, trust me, if you go back to that 19 through 22 phase, that was busy. You go back to when I was, starting a new company, Epic Fighting, and doing the matchmaking, the marketing, the recruiting, the company development, trying to sell sponsorships, that was busy. Mm-hmm. And so it's relative. But for me right now, like you said, hey, I know you're really busy. I'm like, no, I'm not that busy. Like anytime you want to do a podcast, let me know. I'll make it work. Like,
so that's all. So you basically have been hustling and grinding since
So getting back to that, I sold supplements out of the trunk of my car, was working 3 jobs. I was delivering chicken for KFC. I was a busboy and a waiter at Spaghetti Factory. And I was a fitness trainer at 24 Hour Fitness. Eventually went to fitness training full time. I was good at it. That was where my passion was. And I did fitness training for about 5 years before getting into real estate. Overlapped fitness training for about a year before I just went all in on the real estate. And so real estate was 2004. And I started Epic Fighting in 2010.
So how did real estate, was that like instant success or was it a slow grind?
No. So one of the bad things yet blessings was that I missed the gold rush. I missed the easy money. So I got in 2004 and a lot of people were already established by then and they had already had a network out and it's like grandma wants to buy a house, uncle wants to sell their house. And it was just like they were making money. I missed that. I had to learn how to door knock. I had to learn neuro-linguistic programming and sales. And I had to learn how to make phone calls and sit there and make 100 calls in a day. I've done 100 contacts, which isn't 100 phone calls, because you could do 100 phone calls and only talk to 10 or 15, 20 people. I've actually had 100 conversations in a day multiple times. That's like a big deal if you're in sales. It's a really big deal. And so I've done it. One day took me 16 hours to get all 100. I was like, people, please answer the phone. And when they would answer the phone, it's like, please hurry up so I could get that next contact, But because I learned those skills and went through the, got the thick skin, so to speak, when the market kind of collapsed, I had my best years in real estate. I was doing really amazing. 2008, 2010, everyone's like, oh, poor thing, you're in real estate? You like, how are you feeding your kids? And I'm like, I'm closing more transactions than ever,
I love that when there's so many successful, very famous people and stories that we hear, that when things were at their worst for like the majority, mm-hmm. they use that as the time. They, instead of choosing to be like, oh, everything sucks right now, they're like, right. No, we're going to take advantage of this.
Yeah, I always tell people the real estate market is whatever you make it. If you're working in real estate, it's whatever you make it.
Life, though, too, right? Is whatever you make it.
Yeah, the economy's down. What does that have to do with you? Like, nice. The bottom line is if you're working, you're seeing results. If you're growing your mindset and putting in the work, you're going to see results no matter what the economy is doing. You'll find a way or make a way.
I love the 100 phone calls and the, like, actually, because as a coach who, most of my practices are not other coaches, but I have a couple and I've trained coaches. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's the most common between, I would say, a successful coach and a not successful coach is most coaches are doing the work, the personal growth work themselves, but are they taking the action? So what I notice is the clients that I have, whether they be coaches or not, it's action, right? Yeah. They're on the phone, they're going to networking groups, they're out there in the world. And then they take that next action, which is like, will you hire me? Will you work with me? Whatever that, mm-hmm. whatever you got to say to close the deal.
Yeah.
And then the ones that are frustrated and not succeeding are thinking about it, planning, trying to figure it out, but they're not actually dialing 100 right. numbers.
That's most professions. The most successful video guy is not the guy that has the best skills with the camera. It's not, because he might not have any clients. When I was a fitness trainer, I would go and talk to anyone, and those skills transferred over to real estate really well. And then once you get a client, you have to give that customer service and make them feel like they're your only client. And those lessons that I learned in fitness training, I took, if people say, oh yeah, fitness training, you get to work out all day. No, you have to sit there and focus on your client. You're on your feet. Like if you train 10 people a day, that's 10 hours on your feet, focused on that person, putting all your energy into that person. And so real estate was easy compared to, you know, going out and, you know, oh, let me go talk to this guy who's minding his own business, doing his workout, and say, excuse me, can I show you something? And then try to sell them on training. Yeah. It's uncomfortable. But yeah, the people keep working on their craft and working on their technique, but it's like, you got to sell it to someone. Someone has to know about it.
I like that you just brought in, it's uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Right?
And so many of us are committed to like being comfortable, even subconsciously, right? Like we're so committed to comfort is a good thing.
Right.
And I like fitness is a good example, right? If you put me through a workout, and I know you work out what, like twice a day? You're
I'm on the 75 hard right now. Okay. So I'm doing twice a day, 7 days a week. Wow.
At least. That's not comfortable.
It's not comfortable and it's not easy. And there's a million reasons why you can just do one workout that day.
Yeah.
It's Sunday. Like you worked out 12 times already. Can I just work out one time today? It's like, that's not the challenge. The challenge is twice a day for 75 days. And it's super uncomfortable, but it'll give me this sense of accomplishment when the 75 days is over. Doesn't have so much to do with getting in better shape.
Yeah.
I was in good shape. Doesn't have too much to do with improving your body composition. Hopefully that happens, but it may not, because my body may have higher cortisol and I'm not getting the rest time that I need. Yet the mental growth is going to be, it already is. It's like, you know, you have this sense of like, you don't make excuses. You can accomplish anything.
Well, and I love that, like, it's overcoming discomfort in like service of something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like when we think about comfort, you've been in relationships, you talked about, you know, you had a baby at 19, obviously you've been in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's more comfortable to sit on the couch and just turn on the TV and watch a movie and not talk about your problems or the difficulties that you have.
Yeah.
It's more comfortable to sit at your desk at a random job and not walk into your boss's office and ask for a raise. Or say you want a new job or you want to try something different.
Yeah.
It's more comfortable to talk about the things you want to do than actually make 100 phone calls and maybe hear 100 no's.
Yeah.
But I see that like comfort is always, it's like my coach said it to me a long time ago. He's like, dude, comfort is the enemy. Because I was attached to comfort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's our survival mechanism. But it doesn't contribute to growth. And so for a lot of people, the goal should be to think about what they can do that's uncomfortable. What's that thing that scares you to death? Like for me, skydiving was something I always wanted to do, but I was like scary, but I did it.
Now it's
bungee jumping, and I've been up, you know, my daughters are braver than me. My oldest daughter was just like every year at the Del Mar Fair, she would jump on the scale and like, do I weigh enough yet? Can I jump off of this thing yet? And I remember she finally like was 8 or 9 years old, and she just leaped off. And she
bungee jumped at 8 years old?
Yeah, she's crazy.
Oh,
she jumps off like 100-foot cliffs. Like, she's crazy. And so I went up there on her second or third time bungee jumping, And I was with Lily, my middle child, who was little. I'm holding her hand, squeezing her real tight, and we go up on this giant crane. And you look up there, and all these buildings and stuff are way down there. Like, wow, is that even a building? And I went up there, and I was like, I can't do it. This is so scary. Like, how do you do this? I was just going up there to look at it. And I'm once I go up there, I see it. I see her jump, because I got to see her jump from being up there this time. And I'm like, I'll be like, okay, don't be a wuss. You're going to do it. And that was you. I was like 10 years ago. I was like, I haven't done it. That's really uncomfortable for me. So it's something that I'm going to eventually have to do and have that sense of accomplishment.
I think that's a good point too. And you like didn't do it and you waited.
Yeah.
Which I don't know who says this. It's like your survival mechanism, your fear, your ego. It's like doing push-ups in the parking lot.
Yeah.
When you're not doing the thing. So when you're talking yourself out of the phone calls or jumping out of the plane or the thing, it's that fear is getting stronger.
Yeah.
There's a guest that was on here who's a fear expert, Peter Scott, and he says this thing. I don't know if it's his or he got it from somewhere. He's like, fear is the only thing that gets smaller when you run towards it. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. It's like a surfer. When that big wave's coming, you have to face it and you duck dive right, face to face, and you go towards it. If you try to run away, it's going to take your board and you're going to wipe out. And and it can be dangerous too. Your board could hit you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in Croatia last year and I had never cliff jumped. And I'm like there's this bar outside of Dubrovnik that's like on the side of the cliff. And you, when you're at the bar, there's people jumping off into the water.
Yeah.
And it's not like hundreds of feet, right? It's like maybe 40 feet.
That's still high.
Yeah. Even 30 feet, right? I don't know what it is, right? I didn't measure, but I'm watching and some people go up and they don't jump. And some people do. And some people go over and over again. A lot of people are watching. And I'm like, I gotta do this. Yeah. So I go back to where my apartment is. I change. I come back, put all my stuff down. I climb up the rocks. And what I notice is when there's a series of people that go, people keep going. Right. Because you go before me. I'm like, oh, he did it. I can go. And there's like a momentum build.
Right.
And then as soon as somebody gets scared, the scared becomes contagious.
Huh.
And I saw that and I was like, oh, man, and then I'm like, I got to get out of here. Because if I keep watching, I'm making myself scared. Right.
Psych yourself out.
So I get up there and the guy before me like does a like stutters and then he goes.
Yeah.
And then I stutter too. And I was like, I'm aware, right? I'm like, oh, you're doing it. And then I literally say to myself, if you don't go right now, you're not going to go. You're going to talk to yourself. And then I just went. And I mean, it was amazing. Cliff jumping is so terrifying.
Right.
I thought it was way scarier than skydiving. Skydiving, there's a planet beneath you.
Right.
But there's not a hidden rock under the water.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you about, because your big thing, this is like how I know of you is like this, turning your passion into profit or turning your passion into a business. So you succeeded in real estate. And then how does real estate become epic fighting? That's because most real estate agents aren't creating their own, especially with like UFC, right? Like they dominate.
Mm-hmm.
So to have the courage to say, I'm going to create a new segment in this and battle essentially,
Yeah. Well, I was reading the 4-hour work week, and 4-hour work week says, a lot of people have no idea what their passions are. And so, and another thing is it doesn't have to be your passion. It could be something you're good at. Cause when you're good at something, you tend to like it and it becomes something that, gives you a lot of self-worth cause you're good at it. So anything that you get really good at, you love to talk about it. You love to do it. You love to kind of show off because it feels good to be good at something. You know what I mean? Like if you grow up playing basketball every day, but it was never your passion, it was just the only thing going on in your neighborhood. And then you go to another neighborhood and you're the best at basketball and everyone's like, dude, I want him on my team. It's like, all right, I didn't set out with the goal and my passion wasn't basketball, but now that I'm good at it, it's kind of fun. And so what Tim Ferriss said in his book, 4-Hour Work Week was, follow your free time. So it's either something that you've developed skills in, maybe you just had a job or for whatever reason you developed skill in something, and then you could start a business around that, or follow your free time. And my free time, as I started observing, I was training my daughter in martial arts. I was training myself. We would do boxing, we would do Muay Thai, we would do jiu-jitsu. I wrestled in high school. I, um, watched UFC. I didn't watch baseball and football and those types of things. And so I had to try to come up with something to kind of fit that. And my ideas were nowhere near an MMA promotion. It was around...
It's huge. That's a huge dream.
Yeah. That's you know what's funny is Tim Ferriss would actually probably be disappointed because he says start a muse. And a muse is something that you could work on for a year. And then after that, it's typically online. You're selling a service or a product that gets drop shipped out or it's just automatically, you know. And his goal for people is to set it and forget it. You work for a year, and after that, you have the system set up, and you check your bank account every month. And I took on something that took way more time and way more mental real estate and capacity than that. However, it did start with following your free time. And it was a series of things that I talked about on stage. I tried to make the shortest version of as possible, but. It was a series of events of some guy asking me to do it with him. And then he was doing one in Albuquerque. And then I ended up, you know, basically getting all the wheels in motion. And by the time he finished his show, he's like, man, I've been following you on this Facebook and you've built up a pretty impressive, what it looks like going to be a really impressive show, or it looks like a really cool company. I don't really have any value to add for you. Like, I don't know what I bring to the table. I don't think you need a partner. Mm-hmm. And so I took it on myself, and the first show was really successful.
What was the biggest challenge in this goal of like actually putting on a show? What was the thing that when you look back, you're like, I don't know how I overcame that.
Yeah. I think the very first show they asked me as I'm filling out my promoter paperwork, and it was a new type of license in California, and I think I was like the 18th one to get it or something. Maybe I may have the, because you have like a promoter number. I may have the lowest number that's still active. And they said, okay, well, who's your matchmaker? And I'm like, we noticed you left that blank. I'm like, what are you guys talking about matchmaker? Like,
when you said it the first time, I was like, wait, dating? What are you talking about?
Yeah, no. Well, for me, I knew what they were talking about, but I was like, that's not a hard job. Like, people just, whoever weighs the same, and if they want to fight each other, you let them fight. Like, they're going to come to me, and then like, I could do that easily. Lord. That ended up being the heart of the company and the hardest thing to do. It's the most stressful thing by far. I mean, you're juggling these fighters. They have to get their paperwork. They have to get their blood work. They have to get their physical. They have to pay for their fees. They forget to bring a mouth guard, forget to bring a cup. They back out all the time, which is the most stressful part. One fighter is ready to fight, but then the coach says no. And then the coach says, yeah, but the fighter says, nah, I don't want to anymore. You've been in touch with the coach the whole time. And then the next thing you know, the coach is like, he hasn't really been coming to the gym. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, I'm not going to let him fight. And so, wow. And then the other guy's been cutting weight, selling tickets. All his family's excited. All his friends, his whole team has been getting this one guy ready in this camp. And then you're like, okay, well, I don't have an opponent for you. And then what do they do? Like, let me try to find you an opponent. And then you got to hope that person doesn't get mad and stop training or just lose faith. You find them opponent. Are they still ready or do you not find them? It's just, yeah. So the hardest thing, and it's happened a couple shows.
I mean, all that sounds pretty hard.
Where I had to matchmake and promote and do everything. You know, the promoting is really, really difficult, and the matchmaking is really, really difficult. So to have both of those on your plate, oh, God, I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Well, and if everybody thinks about the last time they tried to get a bunch of people to a place, just simple, right? Like, hey, I want to get all my friends to the same bar.
Yeah.
It never goes well.
No.
There's always issues. And that's just like, hey, we're all going to have even a dinner, right? I want to do a dinner with 15 people. All sorts of problems.
People think I'm crazy because they'll be like, isn't there only space for 10? You invited 72 people. I'm like, I know. They're like, but you've already had like 15 confirmed. I know. There will be 10. We'll just be fine. We'll be lucky if there's 10.
Well, I think about like your job as one of the biggest things about like putting on an event, any kind of event, right? But like, is you make a lot of commitments, right? Like you have commitments to the hotel or the venue.
Yeah.
You have commitments to people who are wherever the food or the vendor, all those things, the fighters.
Yeah.
And you need to put butts in those seats.
Yeah. So you have to get it to get 1,000 people in the same place in San Diego is very difficult to do in one night. And so, yeah, if you don't do that, you know, the fighters are like, ah, like, yeah, you know, it wasn't as cool. Right. The sponsors are like, man, where are the eyeballs on me? And the other people who do show regret showing because they're like, man, it's dead here. So luckily that's never happened to us. We've always pulled 1,000. Sometimes we'll pull up to 2,000 people. But people underestimate the amount of focus and effort that goes into that.
Well, that's the thing that I'm – so that's what I'm curious about is what does it take? Not just like the action, right? The action you could go Google. How do I, you know, promote something? But what does it take like from you as a human being to continue to go until you get 2,000 people? Because most people stop.
Well, what I tell people is if we have one show that flops, there's a very high percentage that our company will go bankrupt, right? We don't have $100 million from investor money. One show going bankrupt would be catastrophic to a company like ours. And we've been at the face of bankruptcy. We've looked it right in the eye because, you know, the show's 2 weeks away and we've sold 100 tickets. And it's like, all right, where are the 900 going to come from? And where are we going to get the money? You know, if like we don't sell the tickets and sell the tables and all that stuff, there's no money to pay all these people. And if you can't pay all these people, you're really screwed. The insurance, the venue. And then if you don't sell enough alcohol, you get penalized more. And the only way to sell alcohol is to fill the place up with people who are going to drink alcohol or beverages or food or whatever. But alcohol is the big moneymaker. And so not having that safety net has been the biggest motivator and the biggest blessing. Because if we had, you know, $1 million in investors' money, we could be like, all right, we take a flop on this one. Let's ramp it up, make the money back on the next one, and the investors will take a hit or whatever. But when that money's not there and the company's just going to go bankrupt, and like, because there's stuff that's due the day of the show, and we've had events where luckily there's a line around the block, and we're like, is anybody paying cash? Is anyone paying cash? Because we have to pay the commissioners cash. The money, yeah. And we're like going through, and the commissioner's like, we can't start this show until you pay us. We need the cash. Wow. And so I have my team going down the line collecting money because that's the money we need to make the show happen. And if they weren't there in that line, the show wouldn't have happened. And if the show wouldn't have happened, everybody gets paid, but everybody needs refunded. The tickets need refunded. The sponsors need some type of compensation. And so that's why one flop, and we've had 44 shows without one, thank God, one flop, the company could easily go bankrupt. It's very hard to recover. When you look at other promotions where they've had a flop, they had to cancel a show and refund tickets and refund this and that, they're out of business, like 9 times out of 10.
There's like a recurring theme. And it's like with you and your, whether it be real estate or this, or even it sounds like with your family and fitness, it's like whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, find a way or make a way.
Yeah.
It can be done. And like I said, we've had shows where we're there like connecting the dots at the very end, or, you know, talking them out of like, all right, can you give us another hour to get you the money? The people are going to come and we got to collect. Like there's so many times. That's why people ask me how I can handle stress so well. I'm like, you know, the story I told you when I was 19, working 3 jobs and going to school full time and had a baby and selling supplements out of the trunk of my car. Like, that's stress. Like, if you would have saw me, I was super skinny. I had really bad acne. I wasn't sleeping. Like, you could see it in my face. Like, I was tired. Like, that was stress. Having your company that you've built for many years and this close to bankruptcy, like, that's stress. That's pressure. And so whenever there's a client that's, you know, yelling at the loan officer or something like that, or the loan officer stressed out because they can't get this document in, I'm like, that's relatively minor. You know what I mean?
Let's look at, like, because you're an author now also, and you're working on 2 more books. But then you also have Epic Mastermind, which I've been to a few months ago. I went to an event, and I've had the person I met at the event did this podcast, and we become friends. So we've like...
Oh, who was that?
What's London's last name? So it was,
oh, London, yeah, yeah.
I'm totally blanking on London's last name.
I know who you're talking about, though.
But yeah, who's one of London's like one of the biggest podcast that we've ever done here. And I met him. He spoke with Steve Weatherford at your, London Papa Michael.
Okay.
And him and Steve Weatherford spoke.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that was also, like, I put all the pieces together.
So that's our meetups. We have an annual event. And we just started doing the meetups last year because what was happening is we would have one event per year. And then everybody would get pumped up, but they wanted this kind of like little bit of extra, like, don't forget about me. Like, I'm still motivated. I'm still here to do big things. And so we started these monthly meetups, which were complementing the big event. But the Epic Mastermind Experience is a super life-changing event. A lot of people say it's the most life-changing event of its kind. And there's a lot of...
What is it? Like, what happens at this?
So, it's a 3-day event. One day is Millennial Day. That's where a lot of the young people come and speak and share their stuff. And they're doing big things on TikTok, Snapchat, ClickFunnels, and all this stuff that I'm definitely not an expert on. And we have a hot seat component that we help people kind of fine tune and sharpen their business. We get a round table and there's like, you know, and it's a mixture of very motivated young people, whether they be high school, college, and very successful business people that are trying to take their business to the next level. And so people paid to come to this event, and it was a group of people who were meeting every week. It was like high level people. We created this mastermind. It's called the Epic Mastermind. And we had some very competent, capable, successful leaders in there. And we didn't really know why we were meeting. We just knew that it was going to be good if we all got together once a week. And after a year of meeting once a week, we came out like, what have we been to that's changed our lives? And what's missing out there? What do we as a collective, what can we create that's not out there? And we created the Epic Mastermind Experience. And some really high level people come to speak. They all come on their own dime, which it's a very different feel. Yeah. You know, you don't have people there to like, okay, I'm here to sell. And there's no selling either. So it's crazy. So you have these people who get paid $20,000 to speak, say, and we're saying, okay, for this specific event, not only do we want you to come for free, but we don't want you to sell anything. And so the type of person who will agree to that, they're coming from they're at a different place in their life. You know, total respect to the people. We've had people that did it 1 year, did it 2 years, and then like, you know, now I'm getting paid so much and I'm so busy, I have to get paid. And we're like, hey, love you, man. Congratulations. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just not what we created with this. Now, I book these people on paid gigs for other people's events all the time. You know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, you know, as often as I can. But for this particular event, it's a different vibe. So we haven't made money on the event. These people haven't made money on the event. And so when you're there, you can sense that. It's different versus nothing wrong with selling stuff. Sure. In fact, a lot of people have reached out to these incredible people or follow them on social media and signed up for what they have to offer, the services and products and stuff they have. And it's been life-changing for them. And we encourage people to do that. It's not that someone sells you something that's bad. This just isn't the place for it. This isn't the pitch fest, you know?
So Epic Mastermind, the experience, is actually about just providing value for people.
It's about providing value, yeah.
So essentially, because you charge to go. It's not a free event.
No, yeah. We try to cover our expenses. We haven't yet, so we still pay out of pocket. So hopefully we make it at least profitable enough to where we're not worried about, you know, mainly it's me and Ali are the drivers. And so we're the ones that are putting in the work and writing the checks and stuff like that with the help of some people. But Nicole has helped a lot in the last couple of years. It's something that, and everyone's like, well, why do you do it? If it takes that much time and effort, you're not making money. But it's like the relationships and plus the feeling you get. Yeah. So there's a lot of people that are big deals now. That their first stage was at Epic Mastermind. I don't know if you're familiar with Casey Adams. Like, Casey Adams is a big deal. And his first time ever speaking on stage was at the second Epic Mastermind experience.
Okay. Well, what it reminds me of is, I mean, just doing something like this, like a podcast like this. And I think there's 700,000 podcasts. And only like 100,000 or so are actually like But people do, they're like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast. They get excited, right? Because mm-hmm. they get excited by like, oh, I'm going to have all these followers and I'm going to make all this money and all this stuff. And like, that's not how mm-hmm. life works. Maybe, right? If you're already famous or whatever. But yeah. if you're just like kind of a regular successful person. And then you actually have to do the work, right? Like the filling the seats, hiring the people, mm-hmm. just doing this, right? All the time, regularly, the editing, all the promotion. And I think like you can't. You know, when I started, I was just like those people, right? I was like, ooh, I'm gonna. And then I, thank God, because I fell in love with this.
Yeah.
Because you don't, I think they said, Seth Godin recently said 1% of podcasters will make money. 1%, right?
Like, that's actually higher than I thought. If there's 700,000 podcasts,
Well, and I think he means 1% of like the 100,000 that are actually, yeah. like 1% of the active. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, if this is about that, right? Like if your mm-hmm. thing was about money, then it's not bad.
Right.
It's just a different thing.
Right.
That I get to do something like this because I actually like really enjoy it and it's really fun. Now, hey, if it makes money, that's awesome, right? I'm not gonna be mad.
Right.
But also then maybe I can provide more value for people.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really cool. I didn't know that your event was like that. Because there are so many events that are just about $6,000 to show up, and it's like, man, $6,000 for 3 days? Like, you better.
We created something a little different than what's out there, you know. Yeah. Like I love Tony Robbins; he changed my life. I haven't had meat in, you know, 8 or 9 years because of him.
What did you do an event or did you?
I followed him. I've been a huge fan of Tony Robbins since I was a teenager, but I went to his Unleash the Power Within, and it was great. You know, I went and. I just got the memory on Facebook, like, you know, 8 years ago today or whatever it was. Yeah. And, but what I was really impressed with, and I'm not mad at him because like my friend Ali, who's my partner with Epic Mastermind Experience, he spent over $50,000 on Tony Robbins. Yeah. It's changed his life. He's an immigrant that came here with $500 in his pocket and he owns the biggest fleet of pedicabs in the world. Like if it wasn't for him doing that type of self-development and others, he never would have got his mind to that point. Your business grows to the extent that you do, right? And so he's always working on his growth. And at the Tony Robbins, it's like, okay, you paid anywhere from $600 to a couple thousand dollars to be here. Now watch this. And then they talk about this event, boom, $10,000. This event, boom, $4,000. Or you can get this, all of them for, you know, $15,000. And then if you want to join the Platinum Club, it's, you know, whatever, $60,000 a year. Plus you're going to need to make good money to be able to go yeah. anywhere that they go because it's all on your own dime. So you're paying money to be able to pay money with these people. And I think that's great. I think that's awesome. We actually did create something. A lot of people were reaching out to us. So the first event that we did, we made the mistake and said, no selling. You can't even mention what you do. And then we found everyone was sitting there with this, like this fire in their heart. Like, I am ready. What do I do next? And when the next year we realized like we didn't help the people that were really ready to take the next step. Okay, so what we'll do is you get up there, you talk about your stuff, and then if people come up to you, if you want to have a booth in the back and they're like, you know, how can I learn more? How can I connect with you more? Then you can, you know, hey, here's my information. You can come to my retreat in Bali or you can come to this or that, or we can, you know, because we have experts in all different things. Some mm-hmm. people want to learn about YouTube or Facebook. Some people it's personal growth. Some people it's nutrition. Like we have all these different experts, fitness, whatever. And then we ended up creating last year the Epic Elite. It's $10,000 a year to join. It's a very small group. And we do, you know, growth activities and we get some of these really high level people to meet with us one-on-one through a Zoom call or whatever every, you know, week or two. Nice. And for those people that want to hang out, like the other day we worked on some vision boards, we worked on some growth exercises. Then we rode bikes over to a rowboat. We all got on a rowboat. We rode to this little island. We did some more exercises. And, you know, we had Lucy Burney, who owns the Four Point Sheraton Resort and a bunch of hotels downtown. We had Darren Reisdorf. We had my buddy Ali and my camera guy. We went to that island, he went and he took testimonial videos for everyone who's done business with each other. It's like, nice. Give him a testimonial. Tell him how your experience was. Give a testimony for the person. Give a testimony for their business. And, you know, just really add value. And you're mingling with these people who are high achievers. And I think that's really important.
Well, I like in that, it's like you talk about how you learned as you grow, mm-hmm. right? Like so many people get stopped at like, well, I got to have it all figured out, right? I have a client who just did her first retreat. And I'm like, so she, when she got back, I'm like, so how'd it go, right? We've been working on this. And she goes, well, I didn't sell it out. And I'm like, that's not what I asked, right? Like, how'd it go? And it was like, well, I got this many people. And I'm like, that's awesome, right? Like, that's your first one. That's so cool.
Yeah.
That your first, like, a lot of people would have done their first retreat and nobody would have came. I remember the first time I did an event, one person showed up.
Wow.
And they came just to support me. They didn't even come because they were interested in what I was doing. No. It was just like, they're my friend and I got you. And I think, like, what I love, it's like the people that have the courage, right, to do the retreat, not knowing if they're going to sell it out, to make a fighting event, not knowing if they're going to do it, right? You put your butt on the line.
Yeah.
You creating, like, these different experiences, all with, like, hey, I don't know all the answers. Mm-hmm. And you did it, and then you learned, and you made the next one a little better. You adjusted.
So my as I was creating this event, there's that fear. Like, no one had done a successful one, like, that, like with this new rules and all the stuff that they had come out with.
This is for the fighting.
For the fighting, yeah. For the epic fighting. And you know, on that one, I was really on my own. Like, Epic Mastermind, we had 10 people helping out on the first one. On the second one, it was mainly just me and Ali. So that was a little more pressure. But by then, I'd already been through the pressure. Like, to be honest with you, that's nothing compared to Epic Fighting. Like, Epic Fighting is like, we've had event planners. Oh, we do Bride. I've had Bridezillas. I've done events with 5,000 people. And they do Epic Fighting and they cry. Like, not figuratively, like, yeah. They're, you know, I had this girl who was like Jehovah Witness, who was like super wholesome, like sweet girl. And she's dropping F-bombs left and right, crying. And she's walking out like she doesn't curse. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but she had had it. And it's a lot of stress. It's a lot of pressure. And most people can't take that pressure. And so, but when I was doing my first event, I had two reoccurring dreams. You could call one of them a nightmare. The first dream was that this place was packed, right? There's tons of people there, and everybody is like, thank you so much. Congratulations on your show. The fighters are thanking me for the opportunity and the experience and giving them the limelight to shine in and all this stuff. And it was just this great feeling, like, wow, you're changing people's lives. You created something out of nothing. The people had fun. They enjoyed themselves. They're thanking you for their experience. Like, this is a great feeling. And I would just get pumped up. Like, okay, let's go. Let's do the work. Let's make this happen. Then the other dream, which I would wake up like in the middle of the night, or it would happen daydreaming, and I would just go, oh, like, it's so scary. And that was, we're an hour past the time we're supposed to open the doors, and we're not opening doors because no one's there yet. And the fighters are like, bro, what's up? Are we fighting or not? Like, are you guys doing this? And I'm like, they're gonna come. Like, why is no one here? And it was the scariest image you could imagine. Both of them were motivating. So I had this positive motivation and this negative motivation that really drove me to do whatever it took. Like, 2 a.m, I'm stapling posters to telephone poles in National City in Barrio Logan, like with the chrome staple gun going pop, 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 pop. People were turning their lights on, coming out of the house. I'm like, get out of here, let's go. You know, it was scary. But it was like, you know, whatever it took to get the message out, that and that first event was like deja vu, thank goodness for my first vision, that positive one. They stopped me in the middle of, you know, getting everything together. And it's like, it's time to open the doors. Let's hurry up, get everything together. And they stopped me and someone said, you need to come outside. And I'm like, oh, great. More fires to put out? Are you kidding? And I'm like, I'm busy right now. Can someone else? I'm like, no, you need to see this. And I walk outside and there's a line. It's at the 4th and B downtown. And there's a line going down B Street. They're like, follow me. And I walk to the end of B Street and the line's going all the way down 4th Avenue, all the way down the block. Like, all these people are waiting to get in here. Can you believe it? You did it. And I was just like, this is unreal. And we had our fights. The fights were incredible. And it's, you know, that was the beginning of a movement, you know. People really bought into the vision and the dream.
You spend a ton of time not only working on yourself, but then doing the things you say you're going to do, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's the 75
hard,
or like creating an event or a mastermind, from things that make you money to things that make you no money.
Yeah.
And I just know just following you, like you also spend tons of time with your kids. You're not like an absentee. Your kids are on your social media like all the time.
Blessed, yeah. So every day my son runs to school, so I'm not there with him while he runs to school. And then I get him from school and he runs home. They have early day today. So then he runs home from school. And I found out for him.
Like for exercise, he does this? Is this, or he just.
You know what? He forgot his helmet one day. And I said, well, you're running to school. I don't know what to tell you. You got to be more careful with your things. We don't have time. And I was like, get running. And he ran the whole way there nonstop. And I'm like, that's pretty impressive. And he had a good day, which unfortunately for him is rare. And so the teacher was like, all this is today. And I was like, I thought about it. Like, he's getting in trouble because he can't keep his hands to himself. You know, he's got too much energy. Yeah. And so the next day, I'm like, didn't find your helmet, did you? And in the back of my head, I was like,
hit it.
Yeah. It's like, good. He finds his helmet, now his bike's missing. And so so now he runs every day. The thing I'm worried about now is that it's getting so easy for him that I think I'm going to have to do a workout with him and then run him because he's getting like this week he still had too much energy in class and he's still having some issues. And I'm like, man, the running's not wearing him out like it did the first couple weeks.
You know, when I was a kid, I was really lucky that my mom was like intuitive. Like, you're intuitive. You see that like, hey, him running actually helps him in school. And I couldn't sit and study. Mm-hmm. Like, and there was no, I don't know if I have 80. I don't care, right? It's like, it doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
I'm going to figure out a way to like get the things done. But when I was a kid, I couldn't focus. And my mom realized when I was young, if I try to help Alex study and he's just sitting at the kitchen table, right? He's like all over the place. And it's kind of like 50% win, 50% lose. And she noticed one day that when we would study and I'd be on like my bedroom floor, maybe she's sitting in a chair and maybe we're doing like spelling words or something, right? You know those little basketball hoops that go on the door?
Mm-hmm.
I would be shooting. And she realized, whoa, he's like actually way more plugged into the studying when he's shooting.
Huh.
And there was like the kinesthetic, right? Like there's a kinesthetic learning, like me being able to move, let my brain actually focus more. Now I'm not saying like she can't go to my school and be like, hey, you gotta let him kick a soccer ball in the class. That doesn't make sense. But it changed the way that we studied at home.
Mm-hmm.
Now when I work with clients, if you and me are on the phone and I'm sitting at my desk like with my notes, I think I suck as a coach. Cause I'm too like in it, right? Like I'm like right there, I'm trying to focus and it's distracting. But what I do that I think makes me my best is because I remembered that and I started practicing like as an adult is I actually have two baseball bats in my room. I used to be a baseball player and I have my earbuds in and I'll have my notes on the table. So I'm still being responsible doing, but I'll swing a baseball bat. And what I notice is the way I'm handling the baseball bat is actually the way I'm being with the person. When the person is like stuck or stiff, I'll be like having it on my shoulders and I'm like stretching it. And then when I say something that like unlocks something, I'll like swing like I hit a home run. Mm. But it's not conscious.
Wow.
Right? It's like my body is.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And I'm like I listening like to you this. And like I was going to go like sign up for a WeWork and I was like, I can't do that. I can't pace around with a baseball bat at a WeWork. So like I think knowing our strengths and our weaknesses, right? Because everybody can't sit still at a desk and get stuff done. Mm-hmm. Like you clearly, it sounds like, are better when you're like in action making shit happen as a human being than just like crunching numbers behind a desk.
Yeah. I was talking to our mutual friend Darren yesterday and he was like, one of my goals is, because I told him, I was like, hey, our last event that we did where I told you where we were rowing boats and riding bikes and doing all this stuff, it was super growth provoking. And he loved it. And he was like, yeah, why don't we do the Zoom call next week? I was like, you want to do a Zoom call or should we get in person and finish making our dream boards and doing, you know, a couple of these exercises? He's like, my goal is to get out of the office more. I'm like, mine too. And I took it to the extreme. I went to my Steward of State's office in Eastlake down in Chula Vista and I just cleared it out. And I would have cleared it out sooner, but it was the hassle of having to clear it out. Mm-hmm. It's like moving, you know, like I don't even need that desk there. I'm working from home pretty much every day. And someone called me like, I noticed you're not using your desk. If you want, I could box everything up for you, make it nice and neat. Yeah. I'll do it for free. I'm like, deal. And so, you know, if I do show up there, there's plenty of places for me to work. But I don't need like my whole office down there. And so I'm like, while I'm having this conversation with you, Darren, I am looking at the ocean, sitting on a bench with the sun hitting me. Mm-hmm. I just took my shirt off because the sun got warmer and I'm like, might as well get an even tan. And it feels great. And I'm sitting here working from my phone, having phone conversations, texts, and emails. And everyone's asking me now, like, do you go to a tanning bed and do you dye your hair? I'm like, no, I'm just not in the office anymore. I'm outside every single day. Sun touches me and it feels great, you know? And so I told him like, yeah, you can get out of that office. Just make it your goal. You know, you'll only be there a few times a week if that's your goal. But yeah, so I'm working from my phone.
Yeah.
Outdoors as much as possible.
And I think it's cool is like, if it works, then you keep doing it. At one point I was working outside, like from like under an umbrella from the pool a lot. Uh-huh. And what I noticed was my mindset was by the pool mindset, not mm-hmm. working mindset.
Right.
And so I actually made myself go back inside.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I could still pace around and do the move,
yeah.
but I made myself go back inside because I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, that's the other extreme. Go back a few years ago, I was the guy who had the office that had no windows. It was in the middle of the office. It was boarded up. And I had a couple girls working for my team. And they're like, there is no windows. It is stuffy. Yeah. You like, how can you work? I'm like, I am so head down working that I prefer not to have any distractions. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of an extremist. I'm the guy that'll... Tony Robbins will dare me to not eat meat for 10 days and I'll go 9 years or
is that actually what
yeah,
happened?
Yeah. Or I'll do the, my friend Ali will hype me up about Andy Frisella. And if you want to give him credit, and you probably know who he is. He has a very successful mm-hmm. podcast. Andy Frisella started this 7 year. I didn't know anything about it. Ali just told me, I didn't even look at Andy's page. And, he's like, yeah, these are the rules. And he sent me an image of the rules and I was like, done. Plus, I know his goal was to get in shape. He's my boy. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do that with you to get you in shape. And so then my camera guy, Jay, he did it with us. And we started, and I don't think either of them lasted more than 2 weeks. And here I am, like, I won't quit. Like, I'm kind of an extremist. So same thing with the office. I went from, like, I'll go in the office every day, go in there, like, in the morning, and not leave until the sun's down. And do that, you know, 6 days a week. Yeah. Like that's the life I was living for a while. Now I've kind of went to the other extreme where it's like, I'm not even going to go into the office. But yeah, sometimes I have to remind myself to shower and change and get my head into that part. Because if you go a whole week just with flip flops and tank top, yeah, you start to, okay, wait, I'm a professional. I'm going to have to meet with these people. But so many of the meetings are by phone, my listing agreement. I still do real estate. Listing agreements come in through email. And so we're in a world right now where pretty much your phone is you can do
everything. Yeah, it's just about being aware, right? Like you're aware that, hey, if I'm just in flip-flops all the time, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden there's a shift, right? I can now go out and work by the pool. Mm-hmm. But I have to be aware that, like, wait a minute, is this work or is this summer vacation?
How productive are you being?
Yeah, am I getting done what I said I would get done, right? It's not your standard. But did I, when I worked out by the pool, did I do what I said I would do? It's like an integrity thing.
Absolutely.
And that's cool. That's a fun story to share. I like the difference too, is like you actually started in a place that most of us probably wouldn't want to be in, like an office with no windows,
mm-hmm.
but you got to a place like you did, they always say, right? Like you do what no one else would do to get what nobody else got.
Yeah.
I don't know whose thing that is, but.
Right. Do what others want so you could have what they can't later. Yeah.
So when you look at like the future, right? You got a lot going on. Like what's next?
So my goals right now are to grow Epic Fighting to a $25 million company. That's going to require me growing my mindset. And as I grow my mindset, I will develop the people on my team or recruit new people to the team, probably a combination of both, that will help that company to help the company grow. I already know of a couple promotions that they were able to sell for $25 million, one of them being Bellator, and that value has skyrocketed since mm-hmm. since Viacom bought them. But Yeah, that's the goal. And the goal isn't so much a financial thing. Like when I say the company's worth $25 million, I don't even think about amount of money that I would have of that or make of that. Or I don't even think about selling it or whatever that may be. It's just more of a, it would be fun to take that journey and for the team to have that sense of like, we did it.
It's a measuring stick.
It's a huge measuring stick. Like, it's just like, okay, let's get the company to this success point. And then, you know, how does it feel? You know, you were just the operations manager that were just kind of volunteering most of your time. How does it feel to be the, you know, whatever their title may be, vice president or COO or whatever it is, CFO or the matchmaker of a $25 million company? Like, how does that feel? And so one thing that I realize is I'm going to really work. You know, I work on growing my mindset daily. I'm not forcing it on other people. And sometimes I feel like maybe forcing is not the right word, but I should be contributing to their mental growth, letting them know. Most people don't, that's not part of their daily routine. Yeah, like when I wake up, it's like a good day for me. I'm writing 10 goals, the first 10 that come to my mind. I'm writing 5 to 10 things I'm grateful for. I'm looking at the vision of the future me that I wrote, or I'm on my phone and I'm looking. I have a few versions on my phone where I'll just, you know, from time to time, I'll just sit there and I'll write about myself. Like Jason Stewart is this, this, and that, and it's me in the future. Yeah. It's not me now, and I'll just stare at that, and then I'll look at these letters that I wrote to myself. Like it's been a year, and I've accomplished this, this, and that, and some of them are 3 years old, and I didn't accomplish it, but I still look at it. Like okay, those are my goals. These ones I accomplished, these ones I didn't, why? And so there's a lot of growth in my ideal morning. You know, I do my workout. Sometimes I'll meditate for 10 minutes. I will do, I read my goals that are already set. So not only am I writing my goals, but I'm reading the ones that I already have on there. And then I read my definite purpose in life. And I'm about due to write another one. I'll just write it.
What's your definite purpose in life?
My definite purpose in life is to inspire others to grow. It's to make other people the best versions of themselves and to be a business master that creates and creates teams that can run large companies. It's also to take my kids all around the world, give them as much knowledge and prepare them for life, make them the best versions of themselves they can be. And a lot of that has to do with traveling. We're going on a road trip this in a couple days, and we're going to go through Yosemite and just see all this nature and all this beauty. And you know, traveling was, I felt like I've always done a good job with the parenting, and you know, we all make mistakes, but it's always been a top priority of mine, where some people it may fall down low on the list. One of the things that was missing was travel. And so I've been really excited to be able to take my kids places, you know. So we're doing the RV thing this time, which will be really cool for us to bond, you know.
It's just crazy. Like, it's so impressive, like, just how many things you do at one time. Like, mm-hmm. all the different balls in the air. Mm-hmm. And that you are so committed to so many things. And I think I love that definite purpose in life. Because I know for me, it supports, like, I try not to choose from how I feel about things. Like, I try my best to choose from what I'm committed to. Hmm. And that kind of, it's like, it gives you a place. If you have that thing in the future that, like, your definite purpose, mine, what I'm committed to, then every day it's about living towards that. It's like pulling you forward versus, like, waking up and being like, well, I guess I'll do this today or whatever.
Yeah.
You have a destination. I say in the book, you can't go on Uber or Lyft or whatever and type in, like, take me somewhere cool or awesome. It just goes blank. You have to say where you want to go.
Yeah.
And then the app gives you options.
Right.
But you've got to say where you want to go first. And I love that definite purpose in life. I haven't heard it said like that. So that's the big goal, like $25 million valuation of the company.
That's one of the goals. Huge. Yeah. I want to have a lot of passive income to where work becomes completely optional. And I've been kind of living life like that, maybe a little bit too much because work isn't 100% optional right now. I still have to bring in some active income. Mm-hmm. But my goal is to get to the point where I have extreme amounts of passive income. And a lot of that will be done with Epic Fighting, and a lot will be done with real estate. So yeah, and another thing that if I'm having the ideal morning is I'll recite the self-confidence formula, and that was talked about in Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, and it was also they made a newer version of it in The Miracle Morning, and The Miracle Morning was a super popular book for a few years. But they kind of rephrased it, and I was like, does no one know where this came from? Like, this is not theirs. Like, they completely ripped this off.
Right? Everything is like a new version. I like to think, like, you know, whatever that Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, mm-hmm. like how to influence people. What's the, I forget, like
Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Everything that's come, you know, Tony Robbins evolved off Jim Rohn, right? Like. And, you know, guys like you and me evolve off Tony Robbins and other people. And there's going to be people that are 14 years old right now that are going to evolve from us. Absolutely. And I think of it as like, it's not stealing, because the way you say your message and the way I say the exact same message lands in different people's ears in different ways. And as long as we're actually committed to supporting people, cares like
right.
I don't care if you say all the things I said to you on this call to other people,
right?
That's awesome. That's a compliment.
Yeah,
you know, now if you just change put your name on the cover of my book, that's a different
that's different.
How do people find out like more about you, follow you? What's the best ways?
Instagram and TikTok is Jason O. Stewart. I think Snapchat is Snapchat's jstewart111.
So you have Snapchat, Instagram,
TikTok, Facebook,
all the things.
Yeah, Facebook. I have a page. My profile, you know, the profiles, you can only have 5,000 people. So that one maxes out usually. I try to go back and delete people and add people that I've met. But I have like my stories on Instagram. We'll go to the Jason Stewart public figure page or whatever that is. Because there's no limit to that, and people can always go on there and see it. But LinkedIn, Pinterest, whatever, Jason Stewart.
And then epicfighting.com for the actual events and all like mm-hmm. everything.
And Instagram on that is @epicfighting.
Okay. And then what about like the Epic Mastermind? How do you find more about that?
That's epicmastermind.co or epicmastermindexperience.com.
Can you get to all the things through one of the things?
That would be a great idea. I've had that thought.
I'm like looking at Epic on my you can. Dude, you can do it. So on your Epic Fighting.
Oh yeah.
It shows Epic Mastermind, you touch it and it takes you there. Same thing.
If you go to my Instagram, there is a link for all of them. I have like on my description, CEO of @EpicFighting, co-founder of @EpicMastermind 6619. The Instagram is @EpicMastermind 619.
Cool. So you can
get. I have my wolf on there, Charlotte the Friendly Wolf on Instagram.
Nice. And real estate. Where do they go to find?
Oh yeah, I have a real estate that's on there too. If you just go to Jason O. Stewart, but it's Stewart Estates Stewart Estates and StewartEstatesTeam.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, man.
But like just impromptu, like I got value. You're fun to talk to. You got a lot of energy.
Me too. Yeah, I got value too. I'm still thinking about the bat thing, like however you handle the bat. Like
I never said it like that. I know I walk around with it and I swing it.
That was a nugget for me.
It's like our body says stuff, right? Like our body tells us stuff. Our mind and our body are connected or sometimes not connected. But no, I really just appreciate how quickly you made this happen. And it actually speaks to how you do things, right? You want to do something, you're like, I'm going to do it. But thanks for being like somebody who is, I love the message of turning like your passion into profit or turning your dreams into a reality. Mm-hmm. But while you're doing that, you don't compromise. You're still like the dad you want to be and the father figure you want to be. And you're committed to your kids, like even when you talk about your son running to school, mm-hmm. like it's not like, oh, so my son will be in good shape. It's like, no, he's a better student.
Yeah.
It's really like you really have
force. And it's funny how parents think. Parents, their mindset is if I do this for them, I'm being caring and I'm showing love. When a lot of times you're not. Like I get up and drive my kid to school every day. Like I've had a few people not make positive comments about the running to school. Like, wow, you are crazy. Like you really make your kid, dang, you've lost your mind. Like you're a boot camp sergeant to your kid. Like, okay. And then, you know, you got to think most people's kids are out of shape. You know what I mean?
Most people.
So, yeah, most people are out of, like, you should be running. You should be riding your bike to work. Judging me on my kid running, you know. But we try to do. I had a friend of mine say, it's funny how you said that you don't let your kids drink anything but water almost all the time. Like that's like they don't even ask at a restaurant, anything to drink, guys? Yeah, water. Like the kids aren't even like, can I get a soda? Can I get this? And I had a woman tell me, like, I feel like if I only give him water, then I'm not giving him anything to drink. I feel like a bad parent. I'm like, actually, it's the opposite. Like, you're being a bad parent when you're putting these Gatorades and these sugar drinks in your kid's thing. So, I think that society has kind of lost touch on what our kids and what we need. And we feel like we're doing a good job by not making them walk to school. Like, no, we're made to walk. Like, let our bodies move. You know what I mean?
Well, I hear it as, and this is a great, like, I hear it as, I said this earlier today, actually, before we did this, is people think like we, when we want somebody to be better, it's like, imagine if we're all lemons. It's not like, I don't want you to be a different lemon. I just want to get the most juice out of the lemon that you are. Hmm. And it's not like you're like, my kid should be different. I just want him to be the best version of him.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I hear you're committed to with everyone overall, is like, you want people to be the best people that they are in as individuals. Don't go be somebody else, but like, let's get the best you out of you.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get caught on this, I did my best mentality, and I don't buy into that. Like, you did what it took to do what you needed to do, or you didn't. If your best wasn't good enough, then do better. Yeah. And people are like, well, how can you do better? One of the best analogies I have is, so in Masters tournament in wrestling. So when it came, you know, like I said, I'm an extremist and I've kind of been this way since I was young. When it came to practice, I trained the hardest. Like when we were doing running drills, I was running the fastest. Whenever we were doing drills, I was like, I want to do the most in the 2 minutes that we can do these drills. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and when it was like wrestling, if I was a sophomore, I would go against the juniors and seniors to make varsity. Like there was never like, okay, I'm JV, you're varsity. Like, no, I'm going for varsity. Like, mm-hmm. I'm whooping you or you're whooping me. I don't care if you've been wrestling more than me. And so I always push myself as hard as I possibly could. Masters finals, this guy's ranked in state. Everybody's been talking about him. His name was Omar Diaz. They're like, all right, don't get pinned. That was my advice from all my teammates, all my coaches. Like,
just don't lose, basically.
No, you're going to lose.
Oh.
Like, you're going to lose, but don't get pinned. Because if you get pinned, our team loses more points. So we have a chance to win if you could just fight the pin. I'm like, fight the pin? I'm going out there to whoop this guy. And everyone's like, okay, that's cute, but you can't. So, and so I went out there, and I gave this kid a hell of a fight. And I lost 7-4. And he was like, yeah, you were pretty tough. Good job. You know. And I was like, cool. But I wasn't satisfied. And my team was praising me, like, wow, not only did you not get pinned, you scored some points on this guy and this and that. And I went back and I sat on the bench and I was like, but why didn't I win? Everyone says, do your best. If you want to succeed, do your best. I trained my hardest. I did my best. I was focused every class. I went back to him after he won the whole tournament. And I said, what do you do different than the other people wrestling? Have you been wrestling for longer? He's like, no, not really. He said, after practice, I'll run anywhere from 3 to 5 miles. I'm like, okay, so here's a guy that's going to every practice like I am, training as hard as he can every single practice, but then he goes and runs 3 to 5 miles, sometimes 7, after every practice.
Yeah.
So I did my best. He did what it took to win.
Yeah.
And that's the message I try to get across people. Don't tell me you're busy. We're doing our best. If you don't like it, like, no, do what it takes to get it done.
I don't want to say anything else. I'm going to leave it right there. Leave it there. Jason, thank you. And we'll do this again. I know you got books coming out. We'll do this again. But thank you so much, man.
Appreciate you, brother. Okay.
Thanks for listening. Honestly, I'm just a rebel who found a cause and has a dream. And I'm super grateful for your support. If you got anything from this, please help me out and share this podcast with one person today. You can find me at thedreammason.com. or at Inspirational Alex on Instagram. You are a dream mason because your dreams don't build themselves.